Welcome to Physicians Helping Attorneys Helping People. When people are injured due to negligence or while on the job, they need all the help they can get. Doctors Armin Feldman and Mike Bummer help ensure they get it. Join them as they discuss the newest medical subspecialty of medical legal consulting. Learn how attorneys can gain a competitive advantage in PI, workers' comp, and medical malpractice cases. Armin and Mike can help you better understand the medical issues in your cases, leading to larger settlement amounts and the best possible medical care for clients. They can help save you time and increase case value, all without breaking the bank. Let's get started.
Welcome to this edition of Physicians Helping Attorneys Helping People. I'm Dr. Armin Feldman, and I'm here, as we are every time, with my good friend and colleague, Dr. Mike Bummer. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Armin. How are you?
Good. I'm happy that we are back on the air. As you know, we had a slight hiatus, and my wife and I were very fortunate to be able to take this trip to Spain, and we were in Madrid and Barcelona and had just a wonderful time. So that was fun, and of course, it's always good to get back to work.
That's fantastic. While you were off gallivanting, I've been at home the past month, and one area that's really picked up for me has been these what I call case merit analysis, where I have some attorneys that have been busy lately sending me some standard of care evaluations for determining merit before they put their resources into finding a traditional medical expert. So it's kind of funny, while you were away, I enjoyed kind of having a little bit extra time to get these finished up for my clients, and it was pretty rewarding. So I'm glad that you enjoyed your time away, though.
Yeah, thank you. In fact, I actually, when we were in Barcelona, I sent you an email from somebody that had sent me an email with a case that you wound up doing.
Yeah, that's what we're going to talk about today, right? This is a specifically a causation analysis, right?
Right. So you'll be talking about that causation analysis. And then, Mike, I thought I would talk a little bit about what is our process with regard to doing medical research. But first, let's talk about this case.
Great. Yeah. So this was a quicker one, might have you, where the attorney had a very specific need, and they contacted you while you were across the pond and said, hey, we have this client who was injured in a car crash. It was a particularly low-speed car crash. They had it forensic analysis that showed that the car that rear-ended the woman was probably traveling about 8 miles per hour. Mm. And it resulted in a fracture, vertebral spine in the cervical disc was fractured. A facet of that vertebrae was fractured, and they needed help isolating why this could have happened, specifically with regards to this woman's pre-existing medical condition. She had been diagnosed with Klippel-Feil syndrome, and I'll admit I don't know that I'm pronouncing that correctly, but it's
right.
Klippel is K-L-I-P-P-E-L. Feil is F-E-I-L, for anyone out there who may want to look this up on their own.
Right. And this is one of these things where the average doctor really wouldn't know what this syndrome is all about. And of course, for us, this is what we do. We research things like this so we can help the attorneys with their case. So what happened?
Before we start, Armin, did you know? Have you heard of this? Did you know what this was before the case?
I did. I will tell you, I did not.
Me neither. Me neither. Yeah. But I knew that I could find out. I knew I could find the answer.
Right, right.
And actually, it's a lot of fun. So I jumped in and, you know, like you're going to talk about later, it's kind of natural. I jumped into my medical research mode. And honestly, without ruining my myself describe humble nature, I figured this out and what it was in 5 or 10 minutes, and I understood immediately that I could help on the case. So then I think I replied to you, and I said, certainly we can help. Let's get them the report. I think it's actually exactly what they need to help link the reason that this woman had an unusually significant outcome fracture due to this low speed crash. And so with jumping into what I wrote and found, the woman, like I already said, was rear-ended at low speed, and she went to the ER and had an MRI. And the MRI, well, she had obviously an exam and a workup and the CT that didn't show too much, and then they did an MRI. The MRI did ultimately show a new small amount of edema swelling around that cervical spine area. And there was concern for an acute fracture, and more, it looked more like an acute fracture than degenerative change. And due to the history of the trauma, the MRI said that with the lucency on CT scan and new edema around the facet of this cervical spine area, the fracture should be assumed. And the woman went on 4 or 5 months later to have a anterior cervical discectomy and fusion, ACDF surgery. And the attorney specifically needed us to causatively link the crash to causing this need for very severe surgery, ongoing headache, neck pain, and back pain.
Right. So, Mike, I want to come back to one thing in just a moment with regard to low impact accidents, but we can anticipate what was going to happen, right? Low impact accident, 8 mile an hour accident, and opposing counsel, maybe opposing doctors as well, would say, well, there's no way that at this speed that this woman could have this kind of a fracture due to that kind of auto crash.
Exactly. That's exactly what they were saying. But we have evidence and research that disagrees. And the Klippel-Feil syndrome is the way I described it in this report. So I included a paper, and just let me just read you or tell you the medical description of it, but then I'm going to give you my analogy that I made for this attorney. And I put this analogy in the report. So Klippel-Feil syndrome is a congenital fusion of two or more cervical vertebrae, and it results from faulty segmentation of the vertebral axis. It's essentially saying that when the development of this individual in utero, whenever they were developing in mom's uterus, that the vertebrae did not have the correct amount of space between them, and so they kind of fused together. And the analogy that I used in this report briefly to help the adjuster or opposing counsel understand how we're making this claim is that, similar to a beaded necklace, you know, I have an 8-year-old daughter, and she, if I had a dime for every necklace she made, I wouldn't have to do any of this work. But the way that a beaded necklace, if you took two of the beads that are next to each other, let's say four of the beads, and you put a little bit of Elmer's glue between them, and you fused them to each other, and then you dropped the necklace, or you put some extra tension on it, it's going to crack. It's going to pop. And it's because that lost that elasticity, the way the vertebrae are connected, they have that pulpous kind of like a ligamentous jelly between them that allows your vertebrae to bend and not cause trauma or be overly stressed or strained. So this fusion, much like those beads of the necklace, predisposed my attorney's client to this facet fracture. And given that, again, I already admitted to you, and we know that I'm not a Klippel-Feil syndrome expert, nor am I a vertebral spinal surgeon, but the literature, there were case reports of this that I included. I think, I don't know if you remember, did I send the attorney seven or eight different articles that outline this? There was a couple case reports. There was a few different just descriptive articles of it. And then there were even commentary articles about how this can predispose to significantly worse fracture or dislocation than you would expect in a typical person without this syndrome.
Right. In fact, if this auto accident hadn't happened, this woman may have never known that she had this condition, right?
Well, actually, she knew she had it. It had been known, but then it was when this happened, it was then ultimately it was actually easier to know that this was a contributing factor because she knew that she was, quote unquote, you know, susceptible to whatever that she had reduced kind of range of motion and things like that. She had, but it certainly, okay. I don't think she would have had a neck fracture if she had not been in this auto crash.
So how did you describe the causation issue in your report?
Sure. So after just a short few paragraphs and an image on the Klippel-Feil syndrome, I have a paragraph on the mechanism of injury, which shows the normal spine curvature following a rear impact motor vehicle collision. And I pull that, and I often use this article by Dr. Avancic from 2016. But then specifically, there is the Freeman criteria that I know we've talked about in previous podcast episodes where we use this criteria that has been accepted within the legal field that can connect what we are the causative link. There's three criteria, and it is very plainly put out there by Freeman in this article. And he specifically highlights three criteria. And the first is that there must be a biologically plausible link between the exposure and the outcome. Now, some of this sounds like common sense, but this is important for being able to definitively make our medical opinion. And so, go ahead.
In fact,
please.
This gives us a systematic approach, a scientific systematic approach to the determination of traumatic causation of injuries. That's what the whole thing is about. In fact, as you know, Mike, there are other ways to do this. There's a whole book put out by the AMA with regard to determining traumatic causation. I think those criteria are okay. But they're certainly not formulaic enough and systematic enough and understandable enough by lay people to make a good determination of traumatic causation of any kind of body part. And of course, as you know, there is case law in many states that back up the fact that the Freeman criteria is a valid way to medically determine, systematically medically determine traumatic causation of injuries.
And you said that so much better than where I was trying to go. But we include this wording in these reports to make it clear as well that this is a practical method for us to determine causation.
Especially for the understanding of lay people, right?
Exactly. And so the first one, again, there must be a plausible link between the exposure, which is the crash in this case, and the outcome, which is the fracture. Mm-hmm. The number two, there has to be a temporal relationship. So the timing of it has to link up between the exposure and the outcome. And in this case, that passes. And the third is that there must not be a more likely or probable alternative explanation for the symptoms. So for her neck pain, her headaches, her new back pain, and ultimately needing an ACDF surgery, was there a more likely or probable alternative? Is she a professional female football player? You know, so these all passed the test and allowed me to easily make a very compelling causative opinion report for this attorney.
Yeah, that's just great. Help the case, help the injured person. I know that the attorney was pleased to have this kind of medical opinion to back up their medical theory for the case.
Yeah, and it didn't take that long either. It really didn't take that much time. And I agree. From what I heard, the response we got, I think they were really happy, which makes us feel good.
Great. Anything else on that?
No. Why don't you talk a little bit more about, you had mentioned wanting to talk about how we find the research and how we select what research to use.
Yeah, I do. Let me preface that. I want to come back to, I promised I'd talk about something else too, and that is low impact auto crashes are always problematic. And of course, you would expect in most people, low-impact accident is much less likely to cause traumatic injuries than a higher-impact accident. I mean, that's just physics, right? But the issue is that in a certain amount of people, a group of people in the population, they are susceptible to having injuries even at low impact. And one of the things that we see repeatedly and that we help attorneys with are helping to prove up low impact accident cases. And I just wanted to quickly mention that this is particularly pertinent in mild traumatic brain injury cases. And there is a classic article by Castro and his group. I think this is actually like a 1993 article. And in that article, they actually did studies. And what they found is that the limit of harmlessness, in other words, the speed at which someone who's susceptible to this kind of thing can have a mild traumatic brain injury is the speed that is encountered in a common carnival bumper car rides. I think it was, you know, like 0.8 kilometers per hour. So, I mean, doesn't take much in certain individuals to have to sustain a mild traumatic brain injury. And there's this classic paper by Castro, and then of course follow-up papers that are more current that help support this position. And I think that really ties in with, well, what is our process for doing the medical research? So as our listenership knows, we do not act as medical experts. We're acting as medical consultants on legal cases. And really what that means in plain English is that we will answer any kind of medical question that comes up in a case. And we know from 15 years of experience. Now, in those approximately 1 or 2 out of 10 cases that are going to go to trial that can't be negotiated and settled, well, at that point, you need a medical expert in every area of injury for the trial. But for the purpose of negotiating and settling the case, what the attorney needs are well-reasoned, well-thought-out medical opinions and well-written medical reports that will help them to prove up their medical theories. And of course, the feedback over the years is that by us preparing these kind of reports, attorneys are in fact settling cases for better value with less attorney time. But so, of course, our process, and I think we may have talked about this in the past, but obviously we're going to talk to the attorney, then we're going to read all the medical records, and then we'll interview the attorney's client in every case. Typically, 95% of the time we'll do that by phone or by Zoom meeting, and then we'll do our medical research. And that's what allows us to, as a generalist that's answering any kind of medical question in a case to do this. So a quick sidebar. So 15 years ago, when I started doing this, let's say I did a report on a rotator cuff injury case. And the report, of course, is going to be read by opposing counsel. What's the first thing opposing counsel is going to do? Well, they're going to look me up, right? So in the beginning, they would say, well, opposing counsel would call the attorney that hired me and say, hey, why should I pay any attention to Dr. Feldman's report? He's not an expert in rotator cuff injuries. And what the attorney would say back is, well, Dr. Feldman works as a medical consultant for me in all my cases. And I can tell you, if we can't get this case settled and you force me essentially to take this case to trial, when I hire my retained orthopedic expert, they're going to say exactly what Dr. Feldman said in his report. In fact, Dr. Feldman is relying on the same medical literature that my expert's going to quote yep. at trial.
Yep.
And so that's what allows us to do this. And this is an accepted way to do things within our legal system. So how do we do that? Well, there are all kinds of places for physicians to go to do research. There's this thing called PubMed, and that's one way to look up papers. There's a thing called, I'm blocking on it.
Scholar,
right now.
Google Scholar, of course.
Yeah, Google Scholar, which I'll come back to. But there are other ways to look up UpToDate. That's the one I was thinking
yes.
of. There's a website called UpToDate where you can find papers. Well, the way that we typically do it and the way that we teach is we always start with the Google Scholar search engine. And the Google Scholar search engine, that searches scientific papers. So what we'll do is, to the best of our abilities, we'll read about the case and then we'll put in what we think are the very best medical keywords to get to the papers that we need. And we'll do that. And of course, we get results. And then we will refine those results mm-hmm. as we go. So just to give a simple example. So when I first started doing whiplash injury cases, one of the things that I learned pretty quickly is that maybe 80, 90% of all of the articles written about whiplash injuries have whiplash in the title, but maybe 10, 15%, the whiplash is called an acceleration-deceleration injury, right? So I picked that up. So now I realize, well, I can research whiplash injuries, but I also have to research acceleration-deceleration injuries. And that's what we do. We just refine our keywords as we go. And I think we do a pretty good job of picking up all of the various papers that we think might be pertinent to the case.
I often find mm-hmm. myself very pleasantly surprised at how specific the research is that's available for the unique situations that my attorney's clients have found themselves in, regardless of their injury. It right. 98% of the time has been studied and documented, and there are good opinions about the mechanisms of those injuries, what the outcomes can be expected are, what the potential surgical remedies should be. And
right.
it is actually every case, especially when we get a unique injury, I feel like it's there is so much out there when you start
yes.
looking.
And that's why one of the ways that we have to double and triple check. So, for example, what I'm thinking is that, of course, in many of our reports, we're going to give our medical opinions regarding future medical treatments. And so we have a number of ways in which we can do that. But they're probably, I'm sure you've encountered this too, Mike, for just about any kind of medical condition, problem, injury, disease, you can find a pretty current medical paper that describes what are the current treatments for that particular condition. And so those are some of the yep. routine things that we'll do. So then we will whittle down from this big stack of possibilities to the actual papers that we think are pertinent. And then, of course, not only will we quote those papers in our reports, but we like to actually, if we're going to quote a paper in our report, we'll then, along when we deliver the report, we'll actually deliver a copy of the paper that we've quoted to the attorney.
Exactly.
And yeah. And I would also say that because we're doing all of this research and by our process of talking to the client as well, it's not common, but it's not unusual for us to pick up something that may have been missed, a diagnosis, a traumatic injury that may have been missed because all of the specialists are just looking at their part of the case.
I would say it's not uncommon. It's almost frequent. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just thought it would be helpful for our listeners to know what's that process that we go through to do that medical research. And I'll tell you, for us as physicians, it's quite fun to learn about all these various aspects of medicine. We're not in a position to do any, either of us, to do any orthopedic or neurologic surgery, but I certainly would put our knowledge base of spine injuries, rotator cuff injuries, mild traumatic brain injury, complex regional pain syndrome, all variety of things, really up against anyone because of the nature of the work that we do.
I think you said it best once. We were talking on the phone, and after finishing these reports, the amount of effort and thought that we put into them, and we're doing them on a weekly basis,
right?
It almost feels like 20, 30 years ago, and turning in that semester paper to your college professor, you get that feeling of, this is my work of art. Like, here you go,
right.
You know, Mr. Attorney, I'm so proud to give this to you. And then the feedback is usually, again, putting my humble hat off to the side, is usually so glowing. And then you get that feeling of accomplishment, and it's almost like a body of work that you're giving over that you know is helping someone on the other side. It's really cool. Whenever you said that, I was like, you nailed it, because it is like that paper, and you might finish one in the afternoon and you just feel good about the rest of the day knowing.
Right. Yeah. I have often said to my wife, well, I got to go do a term paper.
Exactly. We should probably mention that if any of our listeners want to see a redacted version, just reach out. We can tell them where to contact us and probably wrap today up, unless you had anything else.
No, that's it. That's it. So, if you have a case or a question, you can email us and at comments@physicianshelpingattorneys.com. If you enjoy our podcast, please be sure to tell one of your colleagues, and we certainly would appreciate it if you'd give us a 5-star rating wherever you listen to podcasts. So I think that's it for today. And we look forward to having you on our next episode.
Thanks for listening to Physicians Helping Attorneys Helping People. For more information about the show and to listen to all the podcast episodes, go to physicianshelpingattorneys.com. You can also email Armin and Mike at comments@physicianshelpingattorneys.com.